We're live again, Greg. They're letting us back on the air. I can't believe it.
One more time today.
Come on, man.
Let's do it.
Where are you going to go now? You're going to go down and see the gangsters, eh, of New York?
I'm not going. I just was there. They're right over there.
The SACO, SATCO.com, baby. That SACO light thing, right thing, Greg. What do you got there?
So this is one of their, this is their tape light kit, but it's part of their Starfish line. Millions of colors, warm to color, tunable white, all app-based. You can get your whole place done up with this stuff.
Starfish, let me see that baby. Thing. What are you talking about? Is it a SATCO or is it a Nuvo?
SATCO/Nuvo, I think.
I think it's both?
Yeah, we'll roll them both.
Okay, so it's 64/135. If you want to go look it up on the SATCO website, which is SATCO.com. That's SATCO.com. That's right. They do the light thing. They do the right thing, Greg Eric. And if you're out there listening to this, you think you have light bulbs in a warehouse or something? You think you're hot stuff? You're not a member of Nailed, though, eh? I don't get it, Greg. Do you still, after all this time?
I don't. It must not be hot stuff.
Read my hat, NAILD. Go to NAILD.org if you sell light bulbs, you sell light fixtures on a counter, over a website, whatever. If you got a warehouse full of light bulbs, you should be part of our association. And we're here for the 2023 convention of Nailed. We're joined today, and I'm going to, you know, I have Carrie's first name. I don't know her last name. What's the last name?
Carrie Holly.
Holly, she took her badge off.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And where do you work, Carrie?
HLB Lighting Design.
Okay. And we're with Catherine. I can let you do the last.
Catherine name. Stecker.
Stecker, and do you work for the same company?
I do. I work with Carrie.
And you guys gave a wonderful presentation here at ArcLight Summit, I believe, right?
Yeah, we think Hopefully. It was wonderful. Yeah, we had fun.
Well, what seemed was to go wonderful well. About it? Tell us. What did you teach?
It was packed full of good stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
If you missed it, it's a shame.
We did, but we're going to talk to people.
We're going to review it right now. Yeah.
Okay. We'll get a high level.
You can watch it right. later.
So what are the highlights? Give us what you talked about.
So we talked about during the pandemic, some of the HLB lighting nerds did a deep dive into color and all the different avenues that lighting, because you need light to see color. And then we kind of used that to start studying all kinds of nerdy things. So this presentation is kind of the culmination of that in sure. a little bit more digestible form. We can talk about color and yeah. how it's made, how light works with color.
I want to also add what I think is unique about it, because we all talk about light all the time as lighting designers and people in the industry. But we actually really were diving into the history of color and the language of color, which was really, mm-hmm. really interesting to learn about. Because what we have discovered is that there's a lot of alignment culturally in different parts of the world in terms of the evolution of people naming colors, but there are nuances throughout the whole thing. And there are examples in history that are fascinating that they didn't have a vocabulary to describe color, therefore they may not have perceived color at the time, which is crazy. So can you imagine not having a word for blue, therefore blue doesn't exist?
Yeah, I heard that the Romans said that the sea was the color of wine or something.
That's exactly yeah. right. Yeah. We use that example because it's Homer in the Odyssey. The yeah. word blue is not used in the entire Odyssey.
Huh.
Did they not see the color blue at the time? Were our eyes not evolved to that point? Or is it just that they didn't know how to describe it? They couldn't differentiate it between another color at the time because they kind of blended different colors together to describe it. It's kind of crazy. So anyway, we go really...
It
was really, really geeked
nerd.
Out.
Yeah.
Historic. And then there's a lot of art references, understanding, you know, when trade routes opened, people didn't have access to certain colors. They didn't exist in their natural world, right? So as the world started to get more sophisticated, colors started entering into farther and farther places. They started developing languages for it. Inuits in very Northern America apparently had 50 words for snow and 18 words for the color white.
Mm.
So they didn't have just white. They had 18 different words for it to describe all the nuances of white.
Like, what do you mean? What's an example of one that never saw a certain type of color? I'm trying to think of you're saying they live here and they just never see that color?
They may not have been introduced to dyes or different spices or... Catherine, you really geek out on this part. What's
yeah, like
example?
If you lived in a tribe in the Amazon and your radius away from home was 2 miles, it might yeah. be reasonable that you've never seen certain kinds of things that you could muddle
like
together to dye purple. Things.
Sure. Yeah.
So
purple
that
wouldn't
when,
exist
yeah, when trade routes oh. open up, you would see purple and then the color, the language would have to be invented in order to explain what that is to somebody else. So is this interesting... concept of if your language doesn't exist to support the color, do you actually see the color? Probably physically, yes, but does your brain just muddle two things together so that because our brains are always working to make things as simple as possible to understand.
But now we have infinite colors available.
That's
to
what
us.
I was going to say is how many colors are there? Well, because they write millions on that box. Is right. there a number?
There's no crazy thing. Yeah. But we are in this, we go into this in the presentation is now we are continuing to further describe color and come up with names for it. It hasn't stopped in the last 100 years, the last 10 years. A new color was just introduced, right? In 2007, a new blue.
Yep. They had never existed before. The newest blue, yeah, the first blue to be, a new blue to be found in like 200 years was found in 2009. It was found by the University of Oregon, or Oregon State University, excuse me. Yep. And it was called Yemenin, and it was like made up of three minerals, so yttrium, I don't have my notes in front of me, manganese and something else. It was like a really bright, bright blue.
And Crayola created a new color in their crayon mix in honor of this new blue.
Called Blutiful. So now it actually, I think it replaced like a tan. So if you buy a box of 24 Crayola colors, that one's in there now.
Now you have Blutiful.
You have a new shade of blue you didn't know you needed.
Wow.
Who needs a new shade of blue? Apparently we did. Yeah. The other thing that was really interesting is in Russian vocabulary, they have a different name for light blue and a different name for dark blue. They don't say light blue and dark blue. They have two definitively different names. So if someone to ask quickly, if Russians looked at your hats mm-hmm. and said, what color is that? They would just say the name light blue. We actually have to pause because we would go blue. But then, oh, is it light blue? Is it dark blue? We have a different vocabulary. Therefore, we are not as evolved in terms of how we describe the color blue, which is crazy.
Yeah, well, the worst one is love.
Love?
Yeah, like the Greeks have three words for love.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, yeah, that's a great example.
Brotherly love.
Yes.
Love of society and then
that's a good
romantic
point.
Love.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's same idea.
Yeah.
So we're still adding words, and as we continue to become a more sophisticated design culture, we're still adding words.
But English already has the most words.
Okay. Yeah, but, well, we learned in color. That's not the case necessarily, which is kind
of
crazy.
English has the most words of any language.
Okay.
Because it's a blend of so many different languages.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so English is actually like German with French.
Okay.
So every, you want to know a little bit about words, you know what's interesting? Every single word in English that has three syllables or more is a French word.
Oh.
Every single one. Responsibility.
Those Normans.
I didn't know that.
Responsibility, decoration, they're all French words.
It's all that William the Conqueror.
You already know 1,200 French words if you speak English.
Really?
Because there's 1,200 three-syllable words, something like that in the English language. So the study of the way we describe things is super interesting.
It is.
And in fact, it's, you know, a lot of people talk about this intersectionality, right? So like where do you start talking about this subject? And sometimes it's better to start with, are we even using the right kinds of words? We spoke to Natalie Rostoff about this instead of a lighting designer, she's a photo tech. You know, mm-hmm. and not an architect, a photo tech, and you describe it differently, all of a sudden becomes something different than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now when you're talking about the colors, why does it matter though? Like, who cares?
Words do matter. And I think, so we have one of our roles as all lighting designers is storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for us to help clients understand their vision and make decisions, we need to be able to have a good vocabulary and we need to be able to tell a good story.
Mm.
Otherwise, if we're using simple terms, they're going to end up with simple results usually, if that makes sense.
But simple's not always bad.
It isn't always bad, but there are a lot of complexities to color and architecture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for example, we show an example during the presentation where there's this really great image of a project of ours where there is natural light pouring into a space and then there is a reasonably warm light source that's being used throughout this hospital project, maybe 3000K, mm-hmm. let's call it.
Yeah.
And you can see definitively how different the light source is because during the day, there's this really deep bluish, probably close to 6000K blue light that's hitting the same white ceiling surface and all the architectural finishes as the warm white that is being illuminating the architecture.
Right.
So interestingly,
so you just said
that's
nothing because you said warm white. Like that's almost a meaningless term in a way.
Well, we go into that. And so I think what's interesting is when you start to define like that could have been an example of a client saying, I don't want that phenomenon to happen. We could talk about, do you want a dynamic white solution? Would that be important to you?
So do you want the color to match across the whole ceiling surface?
Right. Or is that not important to you? But we a lot of times we're talking about white because of It's a fixed static white. It's expensive to convince people to use color, tunable or color changing. It's expensive. It's complicated. The controls are complicated. A lot of clients are like, sounds like a great idea until I hear about how much money I'm going to have to spend and how much more complicated it is. And then they're like, forget that idea.
Right.
So it's just interesting because in design decisions, there are a lot of things. We have the technology to make it very flexible and do all kinds of really cool things that were never possible. But are you really bringing the client along? Are you telling the story? And are you able to convince them to do something? And I also am a big fan
of... And who is the client?
Who is the client? Well, that depends. All of our clients are
different.
That's
what I mean.
Yeah.
Like the client could be the owner of the building, which may receive that message.
Mm-hmm. Or the occupants.
Oh, sorry. I'm out of the camera here. I got to lean back in. So the client could be the occupants. The client could be the architect. The client could be a bunch of different people. And so you have to relate differently to all these people.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's complicated. So I think it was interesting. What is tuning?
Like when you say tuning, like I know what it is, like
tunable
changing
light.
The color of the light, right?
Yeah.
But what is it as a phenomenon? Like what are we trying to do? Mimic the sun? Like what are we trying to do here?
It depends on the project. You could be trying to just, you might be trying to pull out a different emotion in people. So you might be, it might just be an emotional reaction. So let's say, okay, here's an example. We did a Four Seasons hotel, and in the room that had to transition from breakfast to lunch to dinner to cocktails to Zooty Bar at 2 a.m. We used a tunable white system in order to create really, really amber effects late at night.
Mm-hmm.
But then at breakfast, we chose like a little bit of a warmer white. But midday, we changed it a little bit because the amber, kind of like late night whiskey bar look wasn't appropriate for breakfast, right? And their crowd was expecting different things. Now they've got a different age group that's coming in and having coffee and tea and croissants and things like that.
Sure.
They're not expecting that type of experience. It wasn't about circadian rhythm. It wasn't about making people healthier.
I don't know if anything's about circadian rhythm. I got some serious questions about that circadian rhythm stuff.
Okay.
Are you supportive of that? Is that something that you guys are working on?
I'm highly supportive of supporting people's their biological systems.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced it's a lighting problem necessarily.
Exactly.
Go outside. Have
yes.
good, proper light hygiene.
Yes.
Build your buildings yes. to have access to daylight. It isn't 100% placed on the lighting system.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if electric light can do anything but harm, Greg. And I know you've been pointing at me.
Well,
you want to ask
the
question, but I don't.
That's
I don't believe.
That's the Hippocratic Oath. Yeah.
Yeah. Like every single lighting system we've created is great. It's the best. And next thing you know, it causes you to have headaches or it's flicker. Like LED flicker is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
They have, all these bypassed LED tubes, Greg, are they're flickering on and off 100 times a second, right? This idea that we can improve people's health with electric light. Sorry, Adam. I love you, Adam Lillian. I'm not sold on it yet. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's interesting because, like Carrie said, society has changed and our society has evolved from somebody who lived in a cave.
That's my husband.
For 100 years.
Bones.
And now,
I didn't mean to shake my head.
Now you can have light on demand 24/7 being
coming
shoved
your
into
screen.
Your brain 2 inches away. Like, society hasn't set us up for success for this evolution
Correct.
Of that. And so, yeah, the systems may be part of the reason, but like, it doesn't matter if you light an office beautifully with circadian lighting or daylighting. If
someone's looking at TikTok at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, you're screwing yourself up, and that's a societal problem. But I think lighting over the, innovation of our systems over time have helped people, right?
Yeah. I do think there are some populations where I think it really, really could help. One that I'm really interested in convincing clients more that we haven't gotten there yet is I think high schools. If we could give high school students, first of all, they need a different start time. I think we have to get realistic with that.
Yeah, like
it's
nine.
Ridiculous to have them start at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
But if
high schools in Colorado start at 9.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're like evolved nation. Okay. So fine. But in other parts of the country where that's not happening, but I do think also a lot of these kids are dealing with a lot of screen time
mm-hmm.
and they're having weird sleeping hours and they're under a lot of pressure. And I do think that that's a place where we could potentially, and a lot of them are sitting in classrooms who maybe don't have the best daylighting experiences, and they really could benefit from 9 to 1, getting a good dose. I'm not convinced it has to be 6,000 K though. Just give them enough light. Let them just be, in an environment that has enough light. So I think we're fighting sometimes against the energy codes when we're saying, just give them the absolute
time for lighting to ask for more energy back.
Yeah.
You know, do you guys know who Marshall McLuhan is? The guy that said the medium is the message. You ever heard that? The medium is
no.
the message?
No.
So that's a famous line of his. He had another one of these one line. He had a bunch of one-liner guys. He was a Canadian intellectual or whatever.
Okay.
He said another thing. He said, first we shape technology, then technology shapes us.
Hmm.
Right? And so what you're talking about is shaping technology so that people actually have access to more natural light.
Mm-hmm.
And that will change the way we are. You'll be the kids of natural light. So, like, our parents are the TV watching generation.
Right.
Our children are the phone generation. That's the medium is the message. The fact that they hold this thing close to their face is what matters most of all of it. Never mind what they're saying. So with lighting, it's the same thing. We're shaping these technologies. There's a company here. They don't sponsor us. They're not in the nailed. So I'm not going to say their name, but they do make good products and they make these fake skylights.
Oh yeah.
And I bought two of them. I put one in the producer's office and I know I said this on the last show. So, you know, sorry if you've already seen a live stream today, but the producer knows it's fake.
Right. But it feels good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yes. Feels good. His quality of lighting has improved.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's a placebo.
It's a placebo that works.
Yeah.
It works. It works.
And so, like, whether it doesn't produce that much light.
But it makes you feel a lot better.
Yeah,
it makes it feel like it's a skylight.
Yeah.
And I wonder to myself, all these light level things, maybe it's just the feeling.
I tried to do my thesis on that topic.
Is that right?
In 1993. Yeah.
So on the perception of light, of natural light.
On if you could trick people through variability of light in order to get them to feel that they were experiencing natural light.
Wow.
And would it actually make a difference to people emotionally?
Hmm.
So, yeah. It's a true thing, I think. I totally believe in that.
Hmm.
So you guys being overly obsessed with color, maybe you're not, but it sounds like you are.
We're obsessed with light.
Okay, well, yeah. You want to be able to see the color accurately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. CRI has been our commonplace forever.
Uh-oh.
Is this TM30 train coming? Is it taking over? Is it real?
I think the TM30 train is here. I mean, like, so a couple of the slides in our presentation talk about CRI uses 15 little squares to determine, you know, how
and
well
the
light
source is. Weird colors.
They don't do skin color. They're not equitable across all
they're
skin
weird.
Colors. They're like 1980s, you know, kitchen colors. TM30 uses 99. So inherently, we're just getting more. I mean, they're probably not great for all skin colors, but at least it's better. And so I think that's inherently better, right? We want more color sampling. But then the fact that TM30 has that, you know, nice little graphic. So you can look at something and immediately understand, like, what did the numbers mean? They, you know, and how
is
well
skewed
something,
more blue,
yeah,
for
how
example.
Well something
sure.
is
yeah.
fitting.
Yeah.
Allows
Catherine,
us.
You're not telling me that TM30 is simple. It's
yeah,
complicated.
It's not.
You can look at it, but the average person.
Well, but the average person could look at that graph. I could look at, I could say an architect down and be like, this light is going to skew our finishes in this space slightly blue. Whereas that one I originally specified does not. And then you can talk about that from that graph. Versus if you have to bring TM30 up, you're like, well, it has a CRI, or if you bring up CRI, you have CRI value of 92, but actually the R9 value is really low. And then there's like really complicated math versus that low graph. I mean, I think you could start to have really complex conversations where people can understand things in a simple way.
Yeah. I'll give an example of now on the backside of that. I was recently doing a photo shoot for a new project of ours. And we had this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful atrium. It's gorgeous. The one thing I will say that kind of bugged me when we were in the space is that there were these really lovely downlights that we specified that are great, great manufacturer, but their version of 3000K definitely skewed blue. Mm-hmm. And so when you're looking at it in the space compared to the other sources, you just get this like, wow, that looks bluey type of vibe. Had we had TM30 data and had we, because not everybody's producing TM30 data.
Well, you see the TM30 demos where they show you fixtures that have the same color rendering index and the same color temperature and it looks totally different.
That's right.
Right.
That's what I'm getting at.
That's the problem.
So if we had that available to us and we actually took the time to stop and the hard part is not all things are equal, and it's so hard to be like, well, we want exactly that. I think it's within the parameters of, is it close? Like, it's kind of like describing macadam ellipses. Like, how far off can this thing be?
Right.
And so it's about setting up specifications and expectations, but not all manufacturers are investing the time to properly test their sources and then document this stuff and make it easier for designers to access it. Mm. So it's a little bit, I have a lot of faith in it, but it's going to take us a while to get there. We got to build a huge database of information and then people have to externally understand it and use it.
So we have to force the manufacturers to do it.
Some do, and the ones that do it, that's great, but not enough to make it equitable, because we would never write a spec with the five manufacturers. There's just no way to do it.
We can't.
And we recognize it's complex and it's expensive, and that's usually not in their bottom line. Yeah. So it's how does you know, the lighting industry help them get it out there so that we can start using metrics that allow us to have more finely tuned specs, you know, less VE, less redrawing, like this cleans up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Zero to 100 is pretty easy to understand.
It is, but it's not. It's, you know, but
if you saw our presentation, you would understand why that's such a poor metric and why I go into a space that we just designed and built and I can tell the difference between the light sources, but they're both 3000K.
Right.
And they both have high CRI.
Lighting is not a linear science.
No, it's not.
A linear scale does not describe
anything.
It's
complicated.
Correct.
It's complicated.
You know, it has depth and breadth, and there's even like a texture to some lighting colors. That, how do you describe the texture of that color? Sometimes you'll see a wall wash, and it's doing something to the wall that's completely different and unique. And so it's a three-dimensional thing. One, sorry, buddy, but 0 to 100 doesn't cut it.
Dang it. All right, we'll go to TM30 right now. Let's go.
I find TM30 difficult, man. I'll be honest with you.
It's complex math. I mean, I'm not saying I'm an expert, but the idea of telling an architect who looks at things graphically that you can look at another, you know, visual thing to understand it versus just here's a number, that has, you know, our clients typically are visual learners, so showing them a visual thing helps.
I would also say, okay, let's just take the peer numbers and the example that we had in our presentation. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have something that has a fidelity and a gamut. And the gamut, which is showing you, you know, how off things are, it was 108. Okay, so it goes above and beyond a 100 score. That should be an indicator to you that something is oversaturated. There's something weird going on. Mm. And then it's, where is it in the color space? And does it matter? Is it going to help? Is it going to make your project look weird? And you need to have that palette align with where the gamut is going to land. Mm-hmm. So if you, that's where the graphic is telling you one thing, but you're already learning some information about this, the saturation of this source.
And you may be able to tolerate it. Like, it may be a white wall and you're like, I actually don't care that this is a skewed source. But, or you could be like, we've spent $8,000 on this wallpaper. It better look good, lighting designer.
Yeah, exactly. So.
And, you know, when I think about the, you know, TM30 and that, is this an inherently, sorry, I'm not in the screen. Is this an inherently LED problem? Like, was CRI adequate for the halogen and incandescent world lighter?
I don't think CRI has ever been adequate.
We just weren't evolved enough. I mean, they didn't introduce TM30 until 2015.
I mean, our sources were so garbage before.
Yeah, it was so bogus.
Right? Come on, like halogen is beautiful.
Halogen was fine, but like high-pressure sodium, low-pressure sodium, like what? CRI didn't matter. It was a CRI of 12. 20, like,
I have probably imprinted in my brain forever fluorescent lamp codes. You know, mm-hmm. I could recite them back to you now because I specified them like thousands of times.
So you're like ChatGPT.
She's the fluorescent.
It's so funny because people would always ask me, like, I don't mean to make a plug, but at the time, Osram Sylvania, I could just recite any lamp catalog
FP22,
number.
FP22,
I was so like robotic about it.
841K.
Yeah, exactly. And I could do GE MR16 codes like nobody's business.
I loved MR16.
I could do Philips.
They were great. They were great sources.
Yeah, I could do all of their high performance HID stuff. Really, like I was so easily attuned to this stuff, and we just had a limited palette. It was easier. We didn't have a billion quadrillion choices. Now it's like everybody's got their own thing. And so it's just a different.
So it is exacerbated by LED. Though.
Absolutely. And so I think TM30 had to come along because LEDs aren't behaving like, okay, let's call it the big three. You had three fluorescent manufacturers. Mm. You knew that one skewed a little bit pink. You knew that one skewed a little bit green. Right. You just knew it.
You could see it beside each other in the fixture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we could plan for that. I knew what the halogens were doing out there and competitively in the market. And so we were able to, is this master color? Why is this important to us? It was very predictable. And now we're just in a totally different universe. And so, honestly, there are also a lot of, this is another thing that's, look at the manufacturers from 20 years ago who were the market leaders 30 years ago. Many of the companies don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of them got purchased by each other. And there's a whole bunch of people you never heard of.
Yeah.
It's a totally different playing field. And so I do think that we need to have better information in order to actually do high quality design work. So is it there yet? No. But are we building it? Yeah. Slowly. And it, you know what? You guys could invent something even better. Come up with something easier that's better.
There you go.
That's
your challenge. We only criticize.
In your free time. Yeah, in your free time, just come up with a better
You guys are like those two guys in the Muppet Show sitting in the balcony.
Yeah, exactly.
We've heard that before.
On the balcony.
We're
like
the
it.
Lighting industry's raconteurs.
Yes.
We just sit, talk. Eat
it's
popcorn
not a bad
and drink
thing
beer.
To be.
Yeah, I sure. love it.
It works out.
Catherine, any final thoughts for the Get a Grip on Lighting listeners out there?
I don't think so. Thanks for having Carrie and I on. This is exciting. This is awesome that you're doing this live.
Carrie, how about you?
No, I just, I hope that you guys keep doing this. I think it's fun to just like get in there and have some real feedback, real time stuff. None of this was prepared. And I love that. It's just like real conversations. Yep. I'm into that. So keep doing it.
Let's love it.
And if you're interested in the gangsters at Satco, you go to SATCO.com, Greg Eric.
What do we got here? There's Starfish tape light.
Starfish.
They also have A lamps. They have BR30s, everything you need. PAR30s, app based, color tunable, millions of colors. I don't know if they have Blutiful.
Maybe.
We'll find out.
They probably have way beyond Blutiful.
Beyond Blutiful.
Beyond Blutiful.
Make it Blutiful, buddy.
We go just ahead. Don't have words for all their colors.
Go to SATCO.com. Get your words straight. That's right. Start talking right and you'll be better. And if you're talking about light bulbs in a warehouse, Greg Eric, and you sell them over a counter or you have a website or you take orders on the phone, you got to join now, man. Come on. Go to NALD.org. And it's been a great honor talking with Catherine and Carrie. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.